Hello, this is Brian Tracy, and welcome to Customers for Life. This is probably one of the most important subjects that you'll ever learn about. It is the key to the success of every salesperson and the key to success of every business. Without it, no success is possible. So we say your ability to attract customers and keep them buying from you year after year is the critical determinant of your success in business and in sales. So what is the purpose of a business? People are always asking, what is the purpose of a business? The purpose of a business is not to make a profit. The purpose of a business is to create and keep a customer. That's what all business activities are aimed at, is getting customers and keeping them. A profit is the result of fulfilling this purpose in a cost-effective way. The first thing that you'll learn in every business book is go out and get a customer. And once you get that customer, as Shakespeare said, bind them to you with hoops of steel, so that once they bought from you, they would never think of buying from anyone else. So what is the critical measure of the success of a business? How do you measure business success? And the answer is not profits, it is customer satisfaction. Customer satisfaction is the only way a business can survive. So the purpose and measure of a business is to create and keep a customer in such a way that they are satisfied, that they are happy with you, and happier than any alternatives that they have. So what is the true measure of a successful business? The true measure is repeat customers, repeat business. If people are so satisfied with everything that you do in the main that they buy from you again. The only measure that counts in a business is how loyal your customers are and how often they buy from you again in the future. So what's the highest level of customer satisfaction? It is what is called customer advocacy. This is when your customers are so happy with your services and your products that they eagerly tell their friends and tell their friends to buy from you as well. In other words, your customers become your best salespeople. The very best, most successful, most profitable companies are companies that have customers that are so happy they go out and tell everybody else. Now, what we know in our business is that the first sale is the hardest and the most expensive. The first sale is what takes all the effort. The first sale can be made with advertising, large advertising budgets, with discounting. You can darn near give it away. You can add bonuses and with effective selling methods. Sometimes really effective salespeople can sell a product the first time. The first sale, however, is when you exchange promises about your product or service and what it can do for the customer in exchange for money. Now, this is an interesting point. When we're in sales, what we do is we sell promises. We say, I will give you some promises about what my product or service can and will do for you. In exchange, you give me some money to see if my promises are any good. So, therefore, you are selling promises in exchange for cash. And in a skeptical, suspicious society, that's a hard thing to do. But the second sale is the most important sale. And why is that? It's because the second sale is proof that you delivered on your promises. The second sale determines whether you stay in business. Nobody can get away with a single sale. I remember once going to a restaurant, and I'll never forget this, well-advertised, promoted, written up in the newspapers. I went to the restaurant, and the food was mediocre. And I said, you know, this food is not really that good. And they said, well, what do you know anyway? And they just walked away like I had come in illegally. The restaurant was broken 2 months, and whoever put up the money for the restaurant lost it all because they lost sight of the fact that it wasn't just me coming once, it was me coming again that was going to determine their success or failure. So the entire focus of customer service must be on achieving the second sale. You can tell an outstanding business person or salesperson because they're always thinking about the second sale. Customer retention is the true measure of business quality, both product and services. The rule is it costs 10 times as much to attract a new customer as it does to make a resale to an existing customer. Now, when I say 10 times, you say, wow, think about that. Well, first of all, you have to advertise, then you have to promote, then you have to go out and see customers, then you have to see maybe 10 customers to get one, you have to go back and see them again. You have to negotiate with them. You have to deliver. You have to install it. You have to make sure they're satisfied. As opposed to a resale, you just go and get the check. It's as simple as that. So in terms of time, effort, hours, money spent, resales are where all the profit is because there's so little expense to getting a resale. What is the most powerful form of advertising? Well, everybody will agree the most powerful form of advertising is word of mouth. Now, what is word of mouth? Word of mouth is when other people say your product is good. When I took commercial law some years ago, I came across an expression called salesman's puffing. And salesman's puffing comes from the English law. It says that salespeople puff. That means they blow up their product. They say it's the best, it's the fastest, it's the neatest, the newest, the cheapest, and so on. And it's assumed that if you're selling a product or service, you will puff. But if somebody else who has actually exchanged money and bought and used your product or service says it's good, then it's true. Then it's not puffing, it's true. So word-of-mouth advertising takes place when your customers sell for you and tell other people. That's why you find the very best salespeople structure their sales presentation around what we call fact and story, fact and story, fact and story. They tell a fact about their product or service and a story about somebody who used their product or service with that fact and was happy. Stories will last in people's minds for years, whereas all the facts you tell them, they will forget by the time you get back to your car. And the more stories you can tell about happy customers, the more eager people are to buy your product or service. The truth is that satisfied customers tell 3 to 8 people about you. In other words, if I'm happy with your service, in the course of conversation, I'll tell 3 to 8 people. However, dissatisfied customers tell 8 to 13 people, according to the statistics, about their negative experience. Some tell 20 to 30 other people. What's worse is some people even go onto the internet and tell hundreds or thousands of people how unhappy they were. So today, you just cannot take a chance in terms of customer satisfaction. So there are two rules for customer service. Rule number one, the customer is always right. And rule number two, when in doubt, refer back to rule number one. The most expensive customer of all is the one who just walks away, says nothing, and never comes back. This is the customer that it costs the very most to get and to lose. And what's even worse, if this is a dissatisfied customer, the stories that they'll tell other people. Now, some years ago, I worked with Stu Leonard, the Stu Leonard's Milk Store. Now, Stu Leonard's Milk Store is one of the most famous places for customer service in the world. People come from all over the world just to walk around. And Stu told me a story. When he was a young man, he got a job managing a milk store, which is sort of like a store that sits out in front of a dairy and it sells milk products, eggs, butter, things like that, and to retail trade as opposed to wholesale. Well, one day a woman came in. She brought a quart of buttermilk. And she said, this buttermilk is no good. And he was a young manager, and he said, well, he said, let me try it out. So he tried it. And as you know, buttermilk has a special flavor. If you don't like the flavor, you just don't like the flavor. It's kind of acid, bitter. It's not buttery at all. But anyway, she tasted it. He said, no, this is normal buttermilk. Nothing wrong with it. She said, I don't like it. It doesn't taste good. It doesn't taste like butter. Well, madam, it's not supposed to taste like butter. It's called buttermilk. That doesn't mean it has butter. So he got into a big argument with her. And finally, she said, damn you, anyway. She said, I'll never shop here again. You keep your quart of buttermilk. And she walked out, slammed the door, and drove away. And he stood there, sort of feeling very good about himself. Well, he'd certainly shown her. And as he watched her drive away, it suddenly hit him like a wave. Oh, my, he said, what have I done for a quart of buttermilk? And at that moment, he changed his thinking and changed it for the rest of his life. He said he would never again lose a customer through bad service. From then on, he started to give them the most incredible service. More and more people started to come, and they said, why don't you carry this and why don't you carry that? So he added new products, and eventually he added 700 products. That's all. But he sold more of each of those 700 products than any other store in the world. The size of his business grew until it was like a massive, almost like a Walmart mega market. People came from everywhere. They had dancing, stuffed actors in the hallways. They had music and balloons for the kids. People came from 50 miles around to shop at Stu Leonard's Milk Store, and they still do today because he made the customer service experience so great that people wouldn't think of going anywhere else. And this is how he trains his people. He said, after doing some statistical work, he said, the average person spends $100 a week with us. and they come back once a week on average, and they come 50 weeks a year on average, and they shop with us for 10 years on average. That means that every person who walks in that door spends $50,000 with us. So he said, if that's the case, $5,000 a year times 10 years, I want everybody in my company to see every customer as though they had a sign that says $50,000 on their forehead. And if they're unhappy with a carrot or a can of tuna, by gum, you take it out of their hand and you say, we're so sorry, and you replace it immediately because you're talking to a $50,000 customer. And when you, in your business, look at your customers and say, imagine, this customer, if they buy and buy again and tell their friends and bring their friends, this customer could be worth $50 or $100 or $1 million to me. You treat them like they're the most important people in the world. So we say that the main reasons for customer defections, by the way, this is based on Harvard studies and interviews with thousands of customers. Number one reason that people walk away is indifference on the part of someone in the company. To put it in simplest terms, is they felt that someone that they spoke to didn't care, put them on hold, was abrupt when they called up, didn't phone them back, didn't follow up with a complaint or something like that. They felt that someone was indifferent, someone dissed them, if you like. And 68% of people who walked away because they felt they'd been dissed. Now, the second reason for customer defections are passivity. And passivity is taking the customer for granted. Assuming, well, you've got this customer, the customer will buy from you for life, so they call you up, you don't call them back, you go and see them, but your approach is casual, your service is indifferent, you just assume that they'll always be there. Or even worse, is you make a sale and you don't call them back for 6 months or a year. As a result, they are approached by someone who competes with you, and they come and they're eager to get the sale, just like a person courting a pretty girl, and the girl goes out with them instead. And when you show up, it's too late. The third reason for customer defections are lack of responsiveness to customer complaints. A person has a complaint or a problem, and they don't do anything. I remember we used to have catered dinners at our home about twice a year. We would have 50 to 100 people. And you know what a catered dinner cost? We'd use a major caterer. It might cost us $10,000 for an evening dinner for all our clients and associates and so on. Well, one day, we'd use this caterer for 3 or 4 years. One day, they didn't bring enough food. In fact, what had actually happened was they'd sent out enough food from the catering kitchen downtown. But on the way, the staff had stolen 2 major portions of it. So when it came to serving our guests, there wasn't enough. And they were forced to eat vegetables. And so we complained afterwards. And it was very embarrassing. We complained afterwards. And first of all, they wouldn't take the calls. And then they shuttled the calls around. And finally, we got through to someone and explained what had happened. Is that whatever happened, 2 of the major meat dishes disappeared between the kitchen and our house. They said, well, all right. We'll give you a 10% discount the next time you use us. And that was all they offered us. And you know something? We never used them again. We went to another catering company, and we had my daughter's wedding here last year, and you know how much we spent with that catering company? $150,000. Because of a couple of little plates, which they could have replaced or compensated us for in an instant, they lost an enormous amount of business. So lack of responses to customer complaints is a major reason why customers leave. Here's the flip side. What we have found is if a customer has a complaint and you react quickly, their loyalty to you is greater than if they've never had a complaint at all. I'll talk about this again later. Now, the last reason why customers leave is poor quality or high price. And these are less than 20% of the reasons why people leave. Number one reasons are emotional, indifference, passivity, lack of responsiveness to the customer's concerns. Now, in the research, we find there are 4 dimensions of any product or service as they are viewed by the customer. The first dimension, it's really important to understand, is the generic product. This is the essential product stripped down to its bare essentials. So, for example, you buy a computer. The computer comes in the box. That's the bare essentials. Now, that's the generic product. All right. The second level of product, if you can imagine a target with the bullseye is the generic product, and then it goes out to the next circle and the next circle. The next circle out, which surrounds the generic product, is the expected product. Now, this includes the generic product plus the various product and service features that are expected by the customer but not written down anywhere. A simple example if you buy something, you expect that the person who delivers it will be properly dressed and will be pleasant and polite and professional. That's all. And sometimes people will buy a product and it'll be delivered by a rude, surly, indifferent, unkempt person. Now, it's never been written down, the person who will deliver it, but the customer expects that the product or service will be delivered in a pleasant way. It's very important for you to think through what are the things that my customer expects from me that is not written down anywhere. Just assume that's what you would get, because the number one reason for negative emotions, anger, frustration, resentment, is frustrated expectations. If people's expectations are not met, they get angry. And by the way, this applies in every part of life. This applies in your home life. This applies in your family life and so on, is when people feel that their expectations aren't met, they become angry. So one of the things you have to do is say, wait a minute, what are their expectations? What are their expectations? And be sure that those expectations are met. For instance, people expect the box to be clean. People expect that everything will be in the box, including the instructions. People expect that they can phone for help or assistance and somebody will answer. These are things that aren't written anywhere, but if you frustrate these expectations, you turn the customer off. Now, the third dimension of a product is called the augmented product. This is the added to product. This is the generic product plus the expected product plus the additional things you do to make your product or service more attractive to the customer. Now, let me give you an example. Once upon a time, I had a secretary, and she wanted to get a new computer with a new monitor and a keyboard, a server, and everything else. So I said, well, all right, what does it involve? She said, well, I have three different offers. It's the identical computer with the identical equipment. Offer number one is $3,000, is they drop the equipment off in a box at the front desk, and you unpack it and assemble it yourself. That's $3,000. Offer number two is $3,500, and that's where they drop it off, and they set it up for you, and they make sure you understand it, and then they leave. And offer number three is $4,000. Now, mind you, this is for the identical product in the identical box, where they will come in, set it up, give me an in-service, and show me how to use every part of the new computer and be available to me personally or on the telephone for 6 months if I have any questions. So I said to my secretary, I said, well, which of these three do you want to buy? She said, number three, the $4,000 one. And you know what? I agreed with her. So we were willing to pay the equivalent of a 33% increase in the cost for the identical piece of equipment because of the augmentation, the way it was delivered, the way it was set up, the way it was served. So augmentation is where you start to use your creativity, and as you begin to add different little wrinkles, mostly in the form of services to your product, what happens is people begin to be willing to pay you more and to choose you over somebody who cuts the price but delivers something simpler. Now, the fourth dimension of any product is called the potential product. This is the entire product, the generic, the expected, and the augmented, plus the things you can do, limited only by your imagination, to make your customers so satisfied that they buy over and over again. Let me give you a quick story of Stu Leonard's milk store. A woman comes rushing up. It's about 6 o'clock, 6:30 on a Saturday evening, and she's wearing sweats. She's got her hair tied back. She's wearing sweats. She comes rushing up. She's got a bunch of stuff, and she loads it, and the young girl, 16 years old, runs everything through the cash register and said that'll be $52.85. And she goes, oh, and she clutches. Oh, my God. She's forgotten her purse. And she said, I've forgotten my purse. I'll have to go home and get it. She said, how far do you live? She says, it's about 15 or 20 minutes from here. And she said, well, never mind. You can pay us next time you come back. And the woman, sophisticated businesswoman, 40s, very well, smart, she said, wait a minute. You're saying I could just take all these groceries home and pay you when I get back? She said, yeah, just leave us your name, and we'll put the number on it. You pay us when you come back. And she said, but you can't run a business like that. You don't even know who I am. What if I give you the wrong number? She said, no, I trust you. It's okay. This little 16-year-old girl is talking to this businesswoman. Well, the businesswoman stopped. She said, this doesn't make any sense. Where's your manager? And so she called the manager, and the manager came and said, how can I help you? And he said, well, I'm trying to buy this, and I've forgotten my purse, and your clerk here, I don't think you know what's going on, but your clerk here is telling me I can just take this load of groceries, $52 worth, home, and pay the next time I come back, whoever I am. And he turns to her, and he says, Susan, is this your cash register? And she said, yes, Mr. Wilson. And he turned to her and he said, "It's her cash register." And she said, "What does that mean?" He said, "If it's her cash register, she makes decisions on what takes place on this cash register. But she's only 16 years old. But it's her cash register. And that's our policy. She makes the decision." She said, "That's unbelievable." I said, "Yes. So if you want to take the stuff home, go ahead." But she said, "Well, thank you very much. I'll tell you, I am in a real hurry. Coming back would have been a major inconvenience. I really appreciate this so much. I just so amazed." And she went home. Well, she was the wife of the mayor. They were having a large catered dinner at home that evening. They were having about 40 or 50 of the top business people in the city were coming with their wives. And during the dinner, she stopped everybody, rang a bell. She said, "Ladies and gentlemen, I want to tell you an experience I had today." And she told the experience of how well she was taken care of at Sue Leonard's Milk Store. And everybody applauded and cheered. And can you guess how much that was worth? Tens of thousands of dollars of word-of-mouth publicity. People told that story and told that story and told that story. And everybody who heard the story wanted to go to Stu Leonard's Milk Store and go again and tell their friends. So this is the potential product. These are the things that you can do that nobody could expect. But in doing them, you set yourself so far apart from your competitors that your customers will only want to deal with you for the indefinite future. Now, in addition to the essentials of a product, there is what we also call the four levels of customer service. And think about these very carefully. The first level is where you meet expectations. Now, meeting expectations used to be something that people bragged about. We meet customer expectations every time. But because of the incredible competition, today this is the bare minimum to survive in business. Meeting customer expectations will just keep you alive. It's almost like a swimmer that's bobbing in the water. It just keeps your nose above the water, but it doesn't allow you to make any progress. You are a sitting duck for someone who comes along and moves to number two, the second level of customer service, which is where you exceed expectations. This is where you do things that are beyond what the customer expected. These are little things. They could be a little thing like putting the baker's dozen, you order a dozen rolls and the baker gives you 13. That's something nice like a person carries your groceries out to the car. Something a little additional when you buy something from the store and they put something additional in the box just to thank you for coming in. It doesn't cost a lot, but it's just something that exceeds expectations. It's more than you expected to get when you made the purchase. Now, the third level of customer service is where you amaze your customers. This is where you do things that are above and beyond what the customer expected. This is amazing. Now, I'll give you something that's really a simple example that my wife and I experience. We often go to a restaurant called Morton's. And Morton's is a chain, national chain, very popular. And after you've had dinner, after everything is done, and before they bring you the bill, they come around and they offer you a free liqueur, a glass of port, a glass of Courvoisier, a glass of brandy, and so on. And it's free. It's an ounce glass. It's just the end of the meal. And then they walk away. And so your last impression was they brought you a lovely, and it's not cheap, it's beautiful stuff. They bring you a lovely glass to just round off the dinner experience. Now, people walk away, and they walk away kind of feeling happy. They kind of feel glowing. I mean, it wasn't expected. It's beyond expectations. It's kind of a little bit, it delights you. And that's what I meant. Number three is where you delight your customers. Make them really happy, and that's based on your imagination. So what can you do to delight your customers? And then the fourth level is where you amaze your customers. You add something to the product or service that is so unexpected that it makes the customers want to tell others about their experience with you. You do something that really causes them to sit up, and this, again, is limited only by your imagination. So what could you do to exceed expectations? What could you do to delight your customers? What could you do to amaze your customers so they talk about you whenever the subject comes up? And when you amaze your customers, you're on the road to being one of the most successful salespeople in the business and one of the most profitable companies in the industry. Now, by the way, a simple thing is like calling the customer up afterwards and saying, "I just wanted to tell you thank you for buying from us," or "I just wanted to check and make sure everything is okay. Is there anything we can do?" Or, "I just wanted to see if we could help you in any additional way." Something small, something personal, something direct to the other person. Doesn't cost a lot of money, but it causes people to hang up the phone and just be happy that of their choice. They made a good choice in dealing with you. So, if you want to have customers for life, you begin by defining your ideal customer. This is the kind of customer that you want to attract and keep for life. And this is very important. You say, if I could have perfect customers, these are the kind of people I like, I enjoy, I want to work with, I want to serve them with my product or service, I'd like to see them, I like to talk to them, they make me happy. You'll find that one of the keys to success is to do what you love to do. And you only can love your work if you're selling to people, serving people that you really enjoy and care about. So start off and be perfectly selfish and say, what would my perfect customer be like? What would that person be like? And so ask this question, who exactly is your ideal customer? Imagine you could place an order or you could put an ad in the paper for ideal customers, not to sell your product or service, but an ad for ideal customers, and ask how old would they be, roughly, what age range, what would be their educational level, what would be their income, how much would they be earning, what sort of occupation would they have, what would be their current financial situation, what would be their family situation, what need would my ideal customer have, what problem would my ideal customer have that my product can solve, and what goals might they have that I can help them with. In other words, the greater clarity you have with regard to your ideal customers, the easier it is for you to find more of them and for you to determine what do you have to do to get them, what do you have to do to keep them, and here's the great question, what do you have to do to deserve great customers? What do you have to do to deserve great customers so that great customers willingly and enthusiastically line up to buy from you? Now, here's the next question. Why does your ideal customer buy your product from you or from anyone else? In other words, why would they buy it in the first place? If they're going out into the marketplace, what are their expectations? What are their desires? What are their hopes? What are their plans? What are their goals? And what does he or she consider value? In other words, in looking at a product or service, what is valuable and what's not valuable? What is more important to your ideal customer than anything else? I'll give you a quick example. Some years ago, I worked for a trucking company. The trucking company spent $3 million putting in the most sophisticated package tracking system of any trucking company in the industry. And they advertised it and took up newspaper ads in business in order to attract customers away from their competitors. And they said, if ever your product, your package is lost or stolen or broken, we can process claims. We can put in insurance forms. We can take care of your situation faster than anybody else in this industry with this marvelous tracking system. Well, surprise, surprise, nothing happened to their sales. Their sales stayed flat. And so they put a focus group together through a plate glass window, one-way visibility, and they asked about 12 people in the shipping industry what they wanted, what they needed, what they desired in terms of shipping products and services from their place to customers and receiving products and services. Well, then they asked them, what do you think about this trucking company that's done all this promotion? What do you think about their new system? And they said, we don't think anything about their system. I said, why? It's because we don't want our packages lost, broken, or stolen. Is we want our packages picked up by a pleasant, well-prepared, nicely turned-out person and delivered, and by the same token, by a nice, intelligent person, because the person who delivers packages for us is an extension of our company. And we don't care. We don't want them lost or stolen or broken and claims processed accurately afterwards. So they realized that what they were advertising, the fact that they could take care of lost or stolen packages, wasn't what customers wanted. What customers considered value was it would be picked up promptly, it would be delivered promptly, and it would be taken good care of in between. So what is more important to your ideal customer than anything else? Now, this is the great question. What is the one thing that is most important to satisfy your perfect customer? And how can you give that customer more of that over and over? Now, here's another question with regard to a customer service strategy. In what way is your product or service superior to that of your competitors? Well, how is it superior? What is it that you do or offer that gives you a distinct competitive advantage in your market? This means that if you lined up all your competitors in a row, you could say, this is our competitive advantage, and all your competitors would have to agree, yes, they offer that, and we don't have it. A competitive advantage is something that puts you above your competitors in that you offer something that is superior to anyone else in the eyes of your customer. Your customer considers it to be valuable. I'll give you a very simple example, speed of service. Remember Domino's Pizza started off with the idea that they would deliver a pizza within 30 minutes? Because the founder of Domino's Pizza, Tom Monahan, concluded that when people call and order a pizza, they're already hungry. So what you have to do is you have to get them a pizza fast, and speed is more important than quality. Within a few years, they had 8,000 Domino's pizzas. Tom Monahan was one of the richest men in the world because what his competitive advantage was, he delivered a pizza within 30 minutes, and the entire company was organized to take an order, process it, ship it, and deliver it within 30 minutes. And he made himself, I think his sellout price was $1.8 billion. He was a university dropout with 2 years, and he had to sell his worn-out Volkswagen in order to rent a bankrupt pizza place for 2 months in order to try out his idea. Now, number four, in terms of defining your ideal customers, what is your unique selling proposition? What is it that you do or offer for your customers that no other product, service, or business can offer? A unique selling proposition, or a USP, is something that you must have or you must develop. Because what we have found is what is called the single attribute principle, which is that customers buy from you because of a single attribute. Why do you choose them over the others? And a customer will always say, it's because of this. And it's always one thing. And it's always your unique selling proposition. So if someone were to ask you, what is the one thing you offer to your customers that no other competitor can offer that makes your product or service more attractive, more desirable than that of anyone else? What would be your answer? Finally, in defining your ideal customer, you say, who is your competition? Why do your customers buy from your competition? Why don't they buy from you? What value do they perceive in buying from your competition? And how could you neutralize this perceived value? Give you an example. When Lexus came into the American market, along with Infiniti, they had a brand new car. And Toyota had never manufactured an upper-level, mid-class luxury car before, $44,000. It was just above Cadillac, but below BMW, Jaguar, and Mercedes. And everybody's afraid that the car would be, you know, first year, all the defects, problems, breakdowns, and so on. So people were hesitant to buy it. They liked the look of it, but they were hesitant to buy it. So you know what Lexus did? Lexus said, do you like the car? Yes. Test drive it? Yes. Beautiful, wonderful car, but I'm a little bit tense about buying a car first year out. They said, well, I'll tell you what. You can take the car and you can drive it for a month. If at the end of the month you're unhappy with the car for any reason at all, you bring it back, we'll tear up the purchase forms, and you can drive away with your existing car, with your old car. We'll keep it. They said, what? Yeah, we'll let you drive the car for a month, and then you can decide. Well, on that basis, they took the car, and you know what? They never brought them back. Within a few years, Lexus was one of the most popular selling mid-level luxury cars in the history of the world. But the way they overcame that competitive disadvantage is they just let people drive the car for a month. Sometimes you can create a competitive advantage by offering a better guarantee, a better warranty, by offering a better price, better discount. You can include different things. But you have to find some way to neutralize the perceived value of dealing with your competition. We say you can double your sales by increasing the perceived value of buying from you, or you can double your sales by increasing the perceived disadvantage in purchasing from your competitors. Well, here is one of the great concepts in selling. It's called the ultimate customer experience. Is decide that you are going to create the ultimate customer experience. Begin by defining what that means to both you and your customers. So begin with your own experiences. Very simple. What are the best customer service experiences that you have ever had? Think about the companies that you've been to. Think about the restaurants, the stores, the companies you've dealt with. Think what was the very best, and what did they have in common? What was it about those great experiences that you consider that was the best in that area? And then ask, how do you want to be talked about? How do you want to be described by your customers? Now, this is really important. Ask yourself, what exact words do you want them to use when they describe you to others. In the works by Rees and Trout in Positioning the Battle for the Mind, they say the most important thing you do is you determine what words you want to own in the customer's mind. What words do you want to own? When your name is mentioned, the name of your company, your product or service, what words do you want to pop into your customer's mind? And this can't be left to chance. Let me give you an example. About every 2 years, I have the honor of speaking for the top salespeople for BMW nationwide. BMW is famous for three words, the ultimate driving machine. Now, when you say, what's the difference between a BMW and a Lexus? They say a BMW is exciting to drive. A Lexus is boring. Oh, yes, they have the same attributes and qualities and engine and so on and so forth, but a BMW is an exciting car to drive. When you drive a BMW, people think you're a more exciting person. You've got more range of personality, whereas a Lexus is a more stable car. So that's their definition. With Mercedes-Benz, it's engineering excellence. With McDonald's, it's a value, a quality, price, and consistency. So if you go to a McDonald's, you always know you're going to get good value, you're going to get good price, good quality, and it will always be consistent. People don't go to McDonald's because it's a gourmet restaurant. They go to McDonald's because they know that they will always get the same level of quality and good price. And as a result, McDonald's has 40,000 outlets, is one of the richest and most successful companies in the world because they are clear about the words that they want people to think about. So here's a question I ask my friends. I say, what words do customers use when they talk about you to others? If your customer was going to be talking to your prospect, and the prospect said, tell me about this company. I mean, what's your impression? What would your customer say based on the way you treat your customer, based on their experience with you? But here's the great question. What would it be useful for your customers to say? What would it be most helpful? What would you want them to say? If they could say anything, if they could call you up and say, please tell me, what do you want me to tell the prospect? What words would you write on a cue card to give to your customer to read to your prospect? Would you say warm, friendly, sincere, high quality, excellent product or services, quick, speedy, wonderful people, high integrity? I mean, what words would be the most helpful? And whatever those words are, every single day you ask, how could I leave that impression in my customer's mind? What could I do or say before, during, after the sale, so when my customer thinks of me, those words are instantly triggered? By doing that, you can take the entire market, just like every major company that's successful has done it. Now ask yourself this question. What aspects of your services do customers value the most? And you know how you find out? Is you ask your customers and you say, what are the most important things we do for you? What is it about what we do for you that you value the very most? And customers will tell you, well, I'll tell you what I like about you. It's this, or it's that, or it's something else. And then what you do is say, aha, you write it down. And you make sure that you repeat that each time. Number five, how could you serve your customers better than any competitor? If you look at the way your competitors serve their customers, how could you serve them better? Could you serve them faster? Could you serve them with greater warmth? Could you serve them with greater professionalism? I'll give you an example I just read about yesterday. Is in Florida, the enormous number of retired people. And retired people often don't have a lot of money, so they go to McDonald's. And retired people eat early. So one of the retired people asked the McDonald's manager, why don't you make it more attractive for people to come here for their early dinners? And so what he started doing was from 4:30 to 6, just kind of that soft period, he began to put tablecloths and candles on the tables at McDonald's for senior citizens. So senior citizens who went to McDonald's went and sat down, and they had the waiters, the people behind the counter, would come out and take their orders and serve it to them like a restaurant. The people were there anyway. The business was slow during that period of time. And pretty soon, that restaurant was full from 4 to 6 in the afternoon with senior citizens. That's just a matter of imagination. That's just where you augment the product. That's where you delight and amaze your customers. How could you do more of that? Now, finally, what is your customer service quality ranking today? on a scale of 1 to 10, if an independent survey firm were to compare your company's customer service to the customer service of your competitors, how would you rank? Would you be ranked number 1 or number 2 or number 5? How would you be ranked? And it doesn't really matter. Be honest. Say, let's say your number of 10 people in the industry, just say you're ranked number 3. All right? Then your only question is this: how could we improve our ranking by one grade? How could we move from number 3 to number 2? And sometimes just one little thing that you can do can move your quality customer satisfaction rating a little bit higher. And you know what happens? Is the higher your customer service rating in the minds of the public, the greater will be your sales and the higher will be your profitability. This has been demonstrated in over the 20 years of research at Harvard University. Is as people perceive you to be a better company to do business with, they buy more, they pay more, they complain less, and they tell their friends. Now, customer complaints represent a great opportunity to build customer loyalty. What we have found is that if complaints are dealt with immediately, the customer will repeat purchasing more than 90% of the time. Interesting, the customer whose complaints are handled quickly and efficiently is usually more loyal than a customer with no complaints in the first place. Let me give you an example. If you ever break a bone, let's say you broke your leg, and your leg heals, what happens at the point of the break? Well, the answer is that the point of the break will actually be stronger than any other part of the leg. Nature seems to overcompensate by piling more calcium into that repair than exists before or after the break. So your leg is actually stronger at the place where it broke than it was before the break. It's the same with customer service. Is when your customer service is fast and you take care of a complaint quickly, what happens is customers are more loyal to you than they would have been if they'd had no complaints at all. So whenever you get a customer complaint, you say, wow, this is a great opportunity to develop a customer for life. This is a great opportunity to give this customer something to brag about. And so what you do is you respond quickly. So the customer is so happy, they tell other people, you won't believe how quickly I was taken care of. Now, there's a specific methodology for handling customer complaints efficiently and well. First of all, make it easy to complain. Invite feedback by asking and listening. Don't make it hard to complain. Don't make people have to go looking for it. Have complaint cards, call up people, send them out surveys, and so on. But invite feedback by asking and listening. Here's an interesting point if you're in sales. If you ask a customer, how's everything going? Are you happy with us? They'll always say, everything's fine. I'm quite happy. Everything's fine. Because nobody wants to fight. Nobody wants to get into a confrontation. Nobody wants to make you mad. But customers who don't have any complaints are usually customers who are thinking about going somewhere else. So instead of saying, how's everything going? Say, is there anything that we can do to improve our service to you next time? Is there anything we can do to improve our service to you in the future? And you ask your customers about next time and the future. Then your customers will say, yes, and next time if you could do this or you could do that. Customers have no problem talking about an idea for improved service in the future, but they don't want to fight or argue with you by complaining about your service in the present. So always ask a next time question. Always ask a few in the future question. Now, when the customer tells you a complaint or a problem, hear it out completely. Don't defend or explain. Don't get into a fight. Listen, nod, smile, and just say, thank you for telling me that. Thank you for letting me know. Because when you thank people for complaining, they relax the tension they have because nobody likes to complain. Nobody wants to fight. Nobody wants to confront. The tension drifts away, and they like you better. Make it easy for them to complain. Then ask for complete details of the complaint before answering. And here are two statements you can use whenever you get a customer complaint. I learned these in a very powerful workshop some years ago. When the customer complains, say, for example. In other words, that lousy service or this and that. You say, could you give me an example of that? And ask for a specific example. And then when the customer expounds, the second thing you can say is, oh, really, tell me more. Tell me more about that. Tell me more about what happened. Ask for more details. And the two expressions, for example, and tell me more, is all you use when the customer is complaining. Then apologize personally and say, you know, I'm sorry that happened. That's all the customer wants to know is just say I'm sorry. interesting, by the way, they look at all the medical malpractice suits, and what they found is that if there's a problem and the patient has a good relationship with the doctor and they tell the doctor, I have a problem, the doctor says, I'm so sorry to hear that. Could you come back in and let's take care of it? There's never any lawsuits. It's when the doctors or the hospital stonewall, refuse to talk to the patient, consider the patient to be trying to get money out of them and so on, that they go to the lawyers and the lawyers get involved and so on. So just being nice to people when you have a complaint takes away all the friction that's involved. Just say, I'm sorry that happened. I'm sorry that happened. It shouldn't have happened, and we'll do something about it. Seek first to understand, as Stephen Covey would say. Say, I understand exactly how you feel. If I was in your situation, I'd feel the same way. What people want is empathy. They want you to express that, you know, you feel badly about their situation. Then all their anger goes away. And then finally, offer to resolve the problem or complaint immediately. Ask, what would you like us to do? And usually what the customer wants is just more of this or less of that. You know, what we have found is when customers complain, they don't want their money back. They don't want to walk away mad. They don't want to sue. They just want you to give them what they expected to get when they gave you the money. They just want you to fulfill your original promise. That's all they want. So if you offer to fulfill the promise, take it back and give it to them. I'll tell you an interesting thing with Dell computers when they were at the top of the market, and they've fallen a little bit lately, but when Dell was at the top of the market, they had this fantastic customer service policy. They would sell you computers, and you expected they would work. But if there was a problem, and there's always technical problems, they didn't wait a few weeks and send out a technician or have you box it up and send it back. They sent you out a brand-new replacement, and they sent out a service person who would come in and install the brand-new replacement within a day and take the old one away, and they'd upgrade the replacement just to compensate you for your trouble. And every time you had a problem, they would be there with a brand-new replacement, take the other one away, and upgrade what you had. So people were just falling over themselves. They made Dell one of the most successful companies in the world. They made Michael Dell one of the richest men in history because they took such good care of their customers. They delivered to their customers what their customers had paid for when they'd originally bought from them. So reward the customer. Do something extra in the course of resolving the complaint. Throw in something extra. Say, you know, I'm sorry for your inconvenience, but here's this, here's that, like the Dell upgrade. You can always add a little something, add a little product or service or something that maybe you're not even selling very much of, so people feel rewarded for having complained. Those people become your most loyal customers in the future. Now, according to the research, the return on investment in terms of additional sales and profits is as high as 400%. What they did is they took companies and they set up a special 800 number for complaints, and they had to staff it, and then they had to take care of the complaints. And they said, well, this is going to be expensive. But what they found was that for every dollar that they spent handling complaints quickly and well, they got four more dollars of profit from additional sales from those customers. It was the most amazing thing. It was the most profitable part of the whole company was the complaint department, because after they had finished resolving the complaint, is there anything else that we can do for you? Well, as a matter of fact, I was thinking of ordering this or ordering that. We'll send it out to you right away. Thank you so much. We value you so much as a customer. Now, problems of customers are what are called the test of your business and the customer relationship. There will always be problems. It's the way the world works. But the question is, do you pass the test? And whenever you have a customer complaint or problem, remember, they're not trying to hassle you. All they want is for you to deliver on your promises. That's all. And if you respond quickly and say, I'm so sorry we didn't deliver, but we will now, you'll be amazed at how happy they are. That's where you prove that you really value the customer. If you pass the test, they will return and they will tell their friends. So look upon every customer interaction as what is called a moment of truth. A moment of truth is every customer contact. Every contact the customer has with your company at any level is a moment of truth, which is setting up the customer's mind for whether they buy from you, buy again, and tell their friends. Resolve to make every moment of truth a positive experience for the customer. Now, customers describe top service companies and salespeople three different ways. The first thing they say, and this is based on thousands and thousands of interviews. Why is it you deal with this company? Why is it you continue to deal with this company? Why do you consider them to be so good? The first thing they say is they are really nice people. The people in that company are really nice people. Nice is the most common word used to describe the top businesses and the top salespeople. And the second description is it's really a pleasure to do business with them. It's really a pleasure to do business with them. And the third thing they say is I get the feeling that they really care about me and my situation. In fact, they say, I think they care more about me than making a sale. And when customers start to say that you care more about them than making a sale, then you know that you're moving into the top 10% of people and companies in your industry. Now, the most important determinant of gaining customers for life is their answer to what we call the ultimate question. Now, the ultimate question is based on years and years of research into customer service and customer satisfaction conducted by Fred Reichhold of Bain & Company, one of the top management consulting companies in the world. And what they found is after thousands of surveys and focus groups and tests and questionnaires and videotapes and so on, what they found was there's one single question that is the ultimate question in all of customer service and satisfaction. And the ultimate question is simple. You ask a customer, after they have bought from you, on a scale of 1 to 10, based on your experience with us, would you recommend us to others? Let me repeat that. Mr. Customer, on a scale of 1 to 10, based on your experience with us, would you recommend us to others? Fully 85% of your resales and referrals will come from customers who gave you a rating of 9 to 10 on this question. Top companies continually ask their customers to rate them on this scale. Some of the most successful companies in the world today use this as the total determinant of pay, promotion, bonuses, moving up into management, moving up into senior management, is how many customers rate that particular branch or that particular office or that particular person on a 9 or a 10 based on would you recommend us to others. When they get a rating of less than 9 or 10, they ask the customer immediately, what can we do to improve our score next time? And here's the most wonderful thing. If you say on a scale of 1 to 10, would you recommend us to others based on your experience with us? They say on a scale of 1 to 10, well, yeah, I'm a 6 or a 7 or an 8 or whatever it happens to be. If it's not a 9 or a 10, then you ask, what could we do to earn a 9 or a 10 from you? So you would feel like a 9 or a 10 based on your experience. And they say, well, if you just did this or just did that or this didn't happen or that didn't happen, and you write it down, you say, we'll take action on that immediately. And then you take action, and then you call the customer back and say, I just wanted to tell you that we made that change, and we thank you very much for suggesting it to us. That customer will go to an instant 10 and be a 10 for life because you listened, because you were empathetic, because you cared, because you actually went overboard to exceed to expectations, to delight and to amaze. Now, there are 7 rules for creating customers for life. Number 1 is practice the golden rule with every customer. Now, the golden rule, as you know, which runs through virtually all religions and philosophies, is to treat other people the way you would like to be treated. So treat other people the way you'd like to be treated. Say, if I went into a restaurant, how would I like to be treated? If I called a company, if I ordered something, how would I like to be treated? And then write it all down. You say, if this experience was perfect for me, what would happen? And then how can I do this to make sure that this experience is perfect for my customers? Because every customer I bring back is worth 10 new customers in terms of the cost and time and effort to get them. Now, number 2 way of getting customers for life is treat each customer as if he or she was your mother or your father. Treat them as if they were your mother or your father. How would you bend over backwards to cater to your mother and father if you were serving them? And if you see that every single person is somebody's mother, somebody's father, somebody's brother, somebody's sister, somebody's son, somebody's daughter, if you treat each person like a member, a close member of your family, you will be astonished at how much better your customer service will be. Number 3 is always be pleasant, positive, and cheerful. No matter what is going on in your life, never share your problems with other people. Never tell them about the problems and difficulties you have. Always be positive, always be upbeat, always be cheerful, as though you don't have a single problem in your life. When I was a young salesman and I was calling on people, I would often find that customers would take the visit of a salesperson as an opportunity to tell them all the tragedies in their life And they would talk about their terrible marriages and their childhoods and their alcoholism and their aches and pains. And I thought, wow, I must be an incredible person that people feel so comfortable they can just unleash. I mean, they could just tell me anything. I learned later that people like this unload on everybody that they talk to. You're not special at all. But then I made the mistake of thinking, well, geez, this person is unloading on me. Well, I could open up to him or her as well. And then I would start talking about my own problems, and they immediately shut off. They no longer wanted to talk to me. They no longer saw me. They never bought from me. I realized then, you never talk about your problems or your life to your customers. As far as your customer is concerned, your life is wonderful. How's business? Great. How's your family? Wonderful. How's your health? Fantastic. In other words, always be upbeat. People love to buy from people who are positive and upbeat. Now, number four, treat each person like a million-dollar customer. Treat each person as though this person, if you really satisfy them, has the ability to bring you $1 million worth of business. Some years ago, I remember a story. I was living in Canada, and there's a little town south of Regina called Weyburn, Saskatchewan. And it's way, way out in the country. It's a farm town. And it's you got a few thousand people, and it had a few car dealerships, including a General Motors dealership. And one day, this young salesman joined the company, and business was kind of slow, and the old salespeople sat around drinking coffee, smoking cigarettes. One day, an old farmer came up and was looking in the window. And this is in the fall. He's looking in the window of the dealership, and the old guy said to the young guy, said, yeah, go take care of that old goot. You got nothing going. So the young guy was really ambitious, so he went and opened the door, and he said, hello, sir, can I help you? And he said, well, I'm looking at getting a new car, he said, well, come on in. Let me show you what we've got. And he brought him in, and he treated him like he was his father. He treated him like he was really special, treated him like a million-dollar customer. And he showed him the different cars, and he lifted up the hood, and he showed them the pros and cons and so on. And he said, would you like a test drive? And he said, sure. This old farmer's wearing coveralls. He's wearing an old straw hat. He's got boots. He's a little bit dirty. And the old guys are sitting back there laughing at this young guy working so hard on this obviously waste-of-time old farmer. So he took the farmer out for a drive, and the farmer drove around and asked him, what about this and what about that? And the farmer was very polite, but obviously not stupid, kind of smart, what about mileage and things like that. And he brought it back, and he said, I like the car. He said, I think I'll buy it. He said, do you take cash? And the young man said, well, sure. And he pulled out of his pocket a wad of $100 bills, and he just counted out like something like, you know, $18,000 for this car, so much it costed at the time. And the young man said, boy, that's a lot of cash. He said, yeah. He said, I just sold the biggest crop of my farming career. Just sold it and just got the money from the bank to buy me a car. He said, by the way, he said, you got any more of these cars? He said, well, we can always get them in from other dealerships. He said, can you get me 30? He said, 30? He said, yes. He said, I work with a farming consortium south of town here. He said, then they all got together and they admire my judgment, so they sent me in to buy a car. They said, whatever car I buy, all 30 of them are going to buy cars as well. So you can get me 30 more of these. He said, I'll send in everybody to buy just from you. And over the course of the next 3 or 4 weeks, he sold 30 cars to those people. And all those old line salespeople just stood there with you know what on their face. They couldn't believe it. Treat each person like a million-dollar customer. You never know who this person knows. Sometimes I've spoken to a person who had no money at all, but his uncle owned half the city and bought $1 million from me because I was so nice to the kid that didn't have any money. Now, number five in building, creating customers for life is say thank you in as many ways as possible. Send a little thank you note when people buy from you. Call up and say thank you. Call up and leave a thank you on their voicemail. Joe Girard, who I worked with for many years, Joe Girard's a remarkable guy. He would send a thank you card every single month to every single customer. By the time he was finished, he was sending out 20,000 thank you cards, and he was the greatest selling salesman in the world in the Guinness Book of Records because people kept getting those thank you cards from Joe Girard, and they kept coming in and buying more cars and bringing their friends. Respond and react quickly to customer complaints. That's number six. The faster you respond to a customer complaint, the faster you build customer loyalty. And number seven, continually look for ways to build customer loyalty and increase customer retention. Make people happy they did business with you. Just think, if you could get every customer that you sold to come back and buy from you again and bring a friend, you would eventually have more customers than you could handle. The most important sale is the second sale. From the very first contact with the customer, be thinking about how you could earn the second sale and the third sale and create this person as a customer for life. Now, please press *0 if you would like to ask questions, and let me answer any questions that you might have with regard to your customer service situation.
One moment, please, sir, while we collect some names for the Q&A. Okay, sir, are you ready for your first question?
Absolutely. Thank you.
Okay, your first question comes from Tony from New Jersey.
Hi, Mr. Tracy.
Hello, Tony. How are you?
Excellent. I feel great. Mr. Tracy, I own a business, and it's been in business for 20 years.
Yes.
And I'm in the process of restructuring it.
Yes.
And I'm having a lot of problems with the business because of a lot of bad service.
Right.
What do we do to reach out to customers and give them good service now? How do we win them back?
Well, what you do is really, you have to understand that if there was loyalty there, if they loved you at one time, they want to love you again.
Okay.
What you go back and you tell them is that we've had some problems with customer service in the past. In other words, you simply confess. You admit it. You weren't perfect. But we have made all these changes, and tell them the changes that we've made in order to give you the best customer service that is possible in this industry. And please give us another chance.
Okay.
And if you do that, you'll be amazed at how many people will give you another chance.
Excellent.
Just be perfectly honest, and then tell them, this is what we will do, and this is what we will do, and this is my personal phone number. Let me give you an example, Tony. I work for the company called Nucor Steel. Nucor is the most profitable small steel manufacturer in the country. Just unbelievable. And Nucor Steel salespeople, when they call on other people, they have their information on the front of their business card. And on the back of their business card is the name of the president and his home phone number. And below that is the executive vice president and then the vice president. And there's about 8 of the top people in the company have their home phone numbers on the back of every salesman's business card. And every salesman has one job in life, is to make darn good and sure none of those executives ever get a call from a dissatisfied customer.
Sure.
So every customer takes a look at that and realizes, if I have a problem and I can't get satisfaction through this salesperson or through the main office, I can call the president at home.
Yeah.
And that keeps everybody really, really eager to make sure that the president doesn't get any calls. You can put your business card, you can say, here's my personal number, my personal cell number. If ever you have a problem or a question that doesn't get satisfied or resolved, by gum, you call me and I'll take care of it personally.
Okay.
That really tells them that you mean what you say about improving customer service.
Thank you.
Good luck, Tony.
Thank you.
Okay, and our next question comes from Jeannie Waite.
Hi.
Hi, Jeannie.
Hi, Brian. How are you?
I'm wonderful, thank you. How are you?
I'm good, too. I have your tapes. I have your book. I think you're awesome.
Thank you.
You're welcome. My question is, it seems to me the majority of your seminar was with people that have competitors, and we're kind of a different animal. We're really lucky. We have no competitors. So you would think that our prospects and our customers would be pushovers, and believe me, they're not. We work with a real small market niche.
Right.
And so I was wondering if you might have any advice for us, or would I just take and apply the same advice for people that do have competition, just keep my customers extremely happy and do maybe some amazing things for them?
Yes, no, yes, yes, first of all, yes, that's true. Now, here's the other part,
uh-huh.
Jeannie, is that every person has a key reason for buying, but every person also has a key fear that holds them back.
Yeah,
and
I feel
your job is to say, what is the primary fear that people have that holds them back from buying from me? In other words, when you explain, what is your product or service? Can you tell me?
My Can I tell you?
Yes.
Yeah. It's working with petroleum marketers and increasing cash flow, profitability. We do coaching just like you do.
Right.
Yeah, just to get them in the best shape they can possibly be.
Okay. So what is the primary fear that holds people back from using your services?
Well, I'm not really sure. That's where I need to start asking. If I were to just, you know, say what I think it is, I think it's the fear of being sold.
No, I'll tell you what the fear is. It's
okay.
The fear that it won't work.
Oh,
you see,
so
the primary fear that people, the primary motivation for people in business, including everybody on this call,
okay,
is they want to improve their situation. They want
right.
to be better off afterwards. Now, if you're offering an intangible in business, it must either save or gain time or money.
Uh-huh.
It must save or gain time or money in excess of the cost. All products and services that are sold to business, aside from artwork and things like that, must save or gain time or money. So what's the primary fear that people have is that it will cost more than I get.
Uh-huh.
And that's the fear you have to overcome through customer service, through delivery, through follow-up, through following through in your commitments. You have
uh-huh.
to allay that fear. Once that fear is gone, the dam will break and you can get all the business you want.
Oh, great. Okay, I really appreciate that. Thank you so much. I'm going to share that with our CEO.
You're welcome. Good luck, Jamie.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from Dave. Dave, your question, please.
Hi, Ms. Tracy. How are you?
Hi, Dave. How are you?
Good. I'm in Cary, North Carolina. Mine's not a question about our business, but it's a general business question. And I find it ironic that we're talking about customer service. And I wanted to know what your opinion is when you look at a lot of these top-flight companies sending all their customer service overseas. Yeah, that's my question.
Well, there's a reason for that. It's because certain parts of customer service can be standardized. Anybody who's had experience with overseas customer service probably tears their hair out. But there are certain things that can be standardized. Many companies, by the way, you know, we talked about Dell a little while ago. Dell has had some serious customer service problems because they sent it all to Bangalore. And what they're doing is they're bringing it all back. They're bringing their customer service centers back to the U.S., because it just wasn't working. So with regard to you, you just have to ask, there are certain service things that only a person right there can do. And there are other things that are, you know, technical things that can be outsourced to other people and to other countries. And you just have to divide the two. You can't send all services away, but you can send some.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dave.
Our next question comes from Mike from New Jersey.
Hi, Mike.
Hi, thanks. It's a two-part question. The first is, I'm thinking about a switch in my career and going back to sales, and I'd like to change my industry and wanted to know if you had any recommendations on what's a good field to get involved in with sales. And then my second part to that question is, if it's something new to me that I haven't done before, how would I overcome the objection that somebody might have that, for example, I'm selling yachts now, but I don't own a yacht myself, and I've never piloted a yacht. How could I be qualified to sell it?
Ah, well, that first of all, you don't need to own a yacht or to pilot a yacht. You just have to understand yachts. You can even say that this is an advantage because it enables you to be very objective in giving advice to your clients in terms of buying a yacht. It's because you're not married to any particular type of yacht or any type of piloting. Your primary concern is you, the customer, and what you, the customer, wants, needs, and is most capable of getting the most out of. So you can always turn it around. Someone says, you know, you don't have any experience. That's exactly, you use this example, this response. That's exactly why you should deal with me.
Right.
You don't own your own yacht. That's exactly why you should deal with me rather than someone else. Because I can give you the most objective advice. I can be more helpful to you than anyone else because I'm not locked into any particular paradigm or any particular way of thinking. With regard to going back into another field of sales, the most important question is, what do you enjoy? And there's two types of personalities. There are people who like to sell tangible things, and there are people who are very comfortable selling intangible things. Now, a tangible thing is something you can touch, taste, feel, a yacht, a car, a boat, a refrigerator. An intangible is something like insurance, investments, syndications, things like that, that you can't touch. It's more, it's called an intangible. It's like an idea. So first of all, whatever you're most comfortable selling, you can't sell the other. It's just kind of like a genetic thing. It's not like some people are visual and some people are auditory. It's neither good nor bad. It's just the way they are. So you have to find a product that you really like and enjoy, a product that you like to use, that you like to think about, like you talk about, think product that you would like to own, product that you'd like to sell to other people, a product that you would quite comfortably sell to your mother or father. So the more you enjoy the product, the more you think it's a good product or service, the easier it will be for you to sell it. So always start with yourself, Mike, and be perfectly selfish.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next question comes from Margarita from New York.
Hello, Margarita.
Hi, Brian Tracy. It's a pleasure speaking and listening to you.
Thank you.
You're welcome. How would this apply to group sales in the service industry like insurance?
Well, insurance is an intangible. People buy insurance primarily because they like the person selling it. They feel greater confidence in the person selling it. The way that you develop greater confidence is that you are more meticulous in identifying the customer's true needs. The more time that you spend understanding the customer, the more questions that you ask, the more thorough your approach to the customer, the more they will like you and trust you and prefer to buy from you, even if your services are more expensive than someone else's.
Thank you so very much.
You're welcome.
Next question comes from John.
Hello.
Hi, Brian.
Hello,
John. John from Honolulu. How are you?
From Honolulu. Wow.
Yes.
Welcome.
Aloha.
Aloha.
I've got a few businesses in Japan, and a new business that I'm starting up, I already have secured the first customer. It's a business-to-business kind of business.
Right.
And I was wanting to know from you, talking about what is the most effective way to turn that first customer into, you know, additional customers besides, you know, testimonials, references, use in advertising, and that kind of thing. Do you have any additional thoughts on how to leverage that one customer into multiple customers?
Well, one of the things, and I teach this all the time, is once you have made the sale and the customer is happy, you call back on the customer and you make sure that everything's fine, sort of like a service call, and then you say, you know, I really like working with nice people like you. Would you happen to know the names of two or three other nice people like yourself that might be interested in what I'm doing for you? Whenever you phrase it like that, no one's ever going to say, I'm sorry, I don't know any nice people. What they will think of, and you offer them two or three, what they will think of is two, because that's easier. People always chose the easiest path. And they will think of two people that they know and like right off the top of their head. So always, after you've made the sale, it's too early after you've made the sale because now all you've done is made a promise. So now deliver on the promise. So the customer says, yes, I'm happy. Thank you. That was great. By the way, you know, I really like working with nice people like you. Would you happen to know the names of two or three other nice people like yourself that might be interested in what I've done for you? And you'll be astonished. They will think, and then you take out your pen and you get ready to write. Just and it's called the power of suggestion close. You take out your pen, get ready to write, and they'll go, oh, oh. And they won't have to think about it. They'll give you the names of two people. And then you ask, would you happen to know their numbers? And they do, because they will always give you names of people they know reasonably well, and you write the numbers down as well. What I used to do is I would say, you know these people better than me. Would you call them for me and tell them I'm going to be calling? And very often, they would just call. They would make the call right there and set up a new appointment for you, and you'd walk out of every satisfied customer meeting with two more names. And every time you call in a customer and the customer's happy, say, you know, I really enjoy working with nice people like you. Would you happen to know the names of two more people that I could talk to? And you'd be you'd be astonished at how many you get.
Great. Thanks.
You're welcome, John.
Next question comes from Dennis.
Good afternoon.
Hi, Dennis.
Quick question. Our business and thousands of others no longer answer the phone. We have a machine. If there is someone somewhere in the office, are we better off answering the phone or letting it go through a menu and forwarding messages and all?
Well, in our office, what we have is we have it set up like that. If you know the name of your extension, please push it. Other than that, push zero. Make it very easy to get a live operator. That's the most important thing. You don't have to change your system. Everyone on this call has had the exasperating experience of being routed from number to number to number, and you could never get a live person. There's always a voicemail or leave a message or something else. The most important thing is at any time, and some of the best companies I've spoken to or called, they'll say, hello, this is ABC Company. You can press zero at any time to get a live operator. If you know the net extension of the person you're calling, press that extension now and so on. But the first thing they say is press zero at any time to get a live person. And that solves all your problems. You still there?
Yeah.
And again, we go back to the golden rule. That's exactly what you'd like to have happen, isn't it? Dennis?
Sorry, I walked back on the other side of the room. We have somebody in the office, and we'll just make sure there is...
Can't hear you, Dennis. You have to speak into the phone.
I'm sorry. Excuse me.
What did you do, Dennis?
I walked back over and sat down with my cup of coffee. We have capabilities.
Well, I'm going to have to press zero to get through to you.
That's right. Please, next time.
Anyway, just set up your phone so they can press zero at any time to get a live operator, and that solves all your problems.
I think so, too. Thank
okay.
you.
Thanks, Dennis.
Next question comes from Julie.
Right.
Hi, Mr. Tracy. I'm from Perth, Western Australia, so I have to get up really early to listen to you, and it's been fantastic.
Well, thank you, Julie.
I'm a real estate consultant in my fifth year.
Right.
In my first couple of years, I was great at customer service at the time, but really poor at the follow-up.
Yes.
So what I'd like to know is how do I reapproach those old customers that haven't heard from me, and how do I stay in touch with them in a way that's meaningful for them?
Well, you know, one of the very best ways is to go bearing gifts. Take a gift of some kind. It doesn't have to be very much. It can be a single flower. It can be a copy of a book of poetry, a small book of some kind. It can be anything. And just call back and say, I just wanted to drop this. I was thinking about you, and I just wanted to drop this off with you. I thought you might like it. I really liked it, and so on. And
you just completely ignore the fact that they haven't heard from me in 5 years?
Yep. Just completely ignore the fact. What I do is sometimes to reestablish a relationship, I will send out a book, and I'll just send out a covering letter saying, I was just thinking about you the other day, and I thought you might enjoy this book. And I'll endorse the book. It doesn't even have to be your book. Or I saw this book the other day, I thought it might be of interest to you, and give them and you can send it to them, and then you can call up 3 or 4 days later and say, did you get the book that I sent you? And they will be wide open to talking to you. Something about receiving a gift, whether it's after a short term or a long term, causes people to think about you in a very friendly way and be open to talking to you again.
How about the follow-up? Because real estate agents are in Perth are sort of thought of as youth car salesmen. Sorry, no offense to any youth car salesmen out there. So how do I stay in touch without feeling like I'm harassing them?
Well, almost everybody has an email address. And one of the things you can do is you can put people onto an autoresponder. And once a month is fine, is you can send them an email letter, a little newsletter, talking about real estate trends. You can just copy stuff from the paper. Prices are up, prices are down, prices are sideways. This house just sold for that. That property sold for this. Please call me if I can answer any questions for you. But send people in little bits of information. People always like to get information that they can use to improve their lives. And they always value the person who sends the information. So there's a way of doing it at no cost. What I do is I have almost 400,000 people on my autoresponder. And when they buy things from me or communicate with me, I invite them to subscribe to one of my newsletters, and then I send them a newsletter every week on the subject that helps them in their business. And it's quite amazing. I now do business all over the world with people who once a week just get a little newsletter. And it's only a one-pager, a few paragraphs.
And I love your newsletter, and I buy something every week, so it's a little
Yes. Yes, and it's a very simple thing. And because of technology today, you can get somebody who can set it up for you very inexpensively, and you can just send it out once a week with your name on it. And please call me if there's any way I can answer any of your questions. And you can keep in touch with every person you ever deal with for the rest of your career. Okay?
That's great. Thank you very much.
Good luck, Julie. Questions?
Next question comes from Joe.
Hi, Joe.
Hi, Mr. Tracy. How are you?
Wonderful. How are you?
I am doing fantastic myself. I've got a question. I work in a mature industry, and I have a proven product, but it's relatively new to the industry.
Right.
And everybody I speak with is extremely interested in this, and it's been proven, and we have great, you know, clients that have, like you said, we've had the second sales and we've had that, but I've got this full pipeline, and I don't know exactly what the timetable is on the turnaround for these, and I was hoping that maybe you could give me just a tip to ease these prospects through this pipeline a little faster, maybe involving some of the, you know, customer service testimonials and that sort of a thing.
Yes. Well, remember, the reason people aren't moving through the pipeline quickly is several reasons. One is they're not sure it will work. And so if you have customer testimonials, that can take that away. The second thing is there's no urgency. What we find is that customers have an endless number of reasons not to act now. And unless they have a special reason to act now, they put it off. They delay, they procrastinate, they have limited resources. So one of the things that you can do to grease the skids, to make them move through the pipeline faster, is by giving them a reason, a benefit, a value, if they decide a little bit quicker. And you see these all the time. You know, prices going up on the first of the month, almost out of stock. They give people, we say, no urgency, no sale. Your job is to create some kind of urgency. Once they're convinced that it will work, that's the main thing, then you have to give them a reason to take action now. And if they have no reason to take action now, then they will bog on you. They will just delay, and they will procrastinate, and they say, well, I can buy it now or next week or next month. And it's quite amazing. I remember just an example. I had a house for sale. I was selling my home, and we had a purchaser, and the purchaser says, oh, they like the house, but they're not sure about the price, and they have to think about it. They're looking at other houses. But they were just kind of bogging. So we got another purchaser came. And they said, we're going to give you a full-price offer on Friday, and if you accept it, the deal's done. So we called the other people and said, we're getting a full-price offer on Friday, and if it comes in at full price, we'll take their offer. They immediately came back within 1 hour with an offer above full price, and we closed the sale because suddenly they had urgency. Suddenly they realized they're about to lose the deal. It was a nice house, too. With no urgency, though, they had dragged for weeks. So see if you can't add some kind of a bonus, some kind of warranty, some kind of service, some kind of assurance, something that that increases their desire, gets them off the spot, if you like, and gets them to move faster. That's almost an art of selling that you have to think about all the time. What reason could I give this person to buy now rather than later?
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Next question comes from Steve.
Hi, Steve.
Oh, how you doing?
Great. How are you?
I got a quick, easy question. On your 7 rules for customers for life, I missed number 7.
Well, number 7 is, ta-da, number 7, you probably didn't miss it. Number 7 is continually look for ways to build customer loyalty and increase customer retention. Keep seeking little ways. Now, the wonderful thing is as you go through life, you'll see what other companies are doing. They're doing this, they're doing it. Sometimes they'll do things to you. They'll send you something in the mail, they'll call you, they'll leave a message, they'll do something. And when you see it, you say, ha, I wonder if I could transfer that to my industry. And sometimes with a little bit of variation, you can use that as a customer service strategy.
Great. All right, thank you.
You're welcome.
Next question comes from Marvin.
Hi, Marvin.
Hi, Mr. Tracy. I just wanted to thank you for sharing your advice and wisdom. I didn't hear about you till 2 months ago, but I've been writing my goals every day. And you know, I see that one of my goals is to start a part-time business. I'm a full-time software engineer, but I like fixing hard drives. And what suggestions or you might have for a person maybe starting out and maybe, you know, using the internet to get customers in the first place, what could I add value on the internet? What customers might look for that might choose me versus my competitors?
Right. Well, that goes back. And again, we're looking at a marketing question. But you have to ask, who is your ideal customer and why would they buy? And why would they buy from you? And what value do they seek? And how can you emphasize that value? It's interesting, if you get the wrong value or the wrong value that customers are seeking, you can advertise all day long and nobody will respond. But if you can get the right one, you say, my perfect customer would be a kind of person like this. And what they would want more than anything else is this. And then you say, now where can I find more people like that? And so, you know, one of the ways that you can do it is really interesting. It's just write a little letter, a little newsletter, talking about the specific service that you offer. And and remember this, nobody buys what your product or service is. They only buy what it does. And they only buy what it does to improve their life or work. So if I can give you just a crash course in sales, is a good customer is someone who has a problem that your service can solve. They have a need that your service can satisfy, or they have a goal that your service can help them achieve. And the word is clarity. You've got to be absolutely clear, what is the need that my perfect customer would have? What's the problem? What's the goal? And how does my product or service satisfy that? How does it do that? What does it do specifically? And then the last thing you do is you either create or you get a testimonial from someone who had that problem, who said they used your service, and as a result, they solved their problem and they saved, and you always explain your solution in terms of dollars. Dollars or time, for that matter. They're both the same. Remember I said save or gain, time or money? Is your solution must have an impact in time or money. And it must be crystal clear. So you aim at the person who needs your product or service. You define the result of using your product or service in terms of money gained or time saved.
Thank you.
You're welcome, Marvin.
Next question comes from Jim from Houston.
Hi, Jim.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm doing wonderfully. How are you?
Wonderful. This is good stuff. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you.
My question is, you know, I have a home-based, you know, my wife and I just started a home-based network marketing business about 3 months ago.
Yes.
And, you know, as there's two aspects of that business, and the retailing side has started off, got off to a great start. But on the other side of the business, you know, where you duplicate the process and you help others get into business.
Right.
I understand that there's a high volume of numbers that you have to go through to find people who are interested. And we actually have a pretty good system for checking interest.
Yes.
And finding people who want to earn extra money in, you know, on top of what they're doing in their day-to-day job is not a hard part of the business. But
right.
The challenging part is one of the biggest objections I get is right off the bat is, well, how much time is this going to take?
Right.
And then that, you know, which is interesting to me because one of the things in earning extra money is you want to create more time for yourself and lifestyle. But
right.
I get an objection on time and then people not wanting to commit to the time to earn extra money.
Well, here's a way you might approach that. Is we teach this in our courses. Many people on this call have been through our courses. We teach the concept of the hourly rate. And we say, how much do you want to earn per hour? What is your current hourly rate? And find out. And what you do is you take basically and you divide their annual income by 2,000. It's a rough number, but it's about the number of hours that a person works. And so you say, all right, if you're earning $50,000 a year, then your hourly rate, 2,000 into 50, is $25 an hour. So if what would you have to earn per hour to justify a home-based business or an additional income opportunity? And then you show them that they can make two or three times as much as they're currently making as an hourly rate by running their own business. And sometimes it really wakes people up. They had no idea. First, most people are very have not done their hourly rate. But once they can look at your business in terms of how they can increase their income at a multiple of their current hourly rate, then they change their mind completely.
Oh, that's great. I didn't think about that.
There's one other point is, and it's a question that we ask, and it's very important for everybody who's listening, is I ask, what is the most valuable asset that a person has? And the answer is their earning ability. Your house, your home, your car could all be lost or burned down or stolen. But if you have your earning ability, you can make it all back. So what is the most important investment you make? It's an investment in your earning ability. It's an investment in your ability to earn more money. And everything that you do that upgrades your skills and your ability to earn more money is an incredibly good investment because it can pay off year after year after year. And so when you talk to people about that, it's upgrading your skills, learning how to do this business, to earn this money, dramatically increases your earning ability, increases your value. It increases the future quality of your life for yourself and your family.
That's great. Thanks, Mr. Tracy.
You're welcome. Thank you, Jim. Good luck. Okay, two more questions.
Our next question comes from John.
Hello, Don.
It's John.
Hello, John.
John.
Hi, Brian.
How are you?
How are you doing, Brian? This
great.
Is John.
Hi, John.
I want to thank you first for everything you've shared over the phone. It's really helped me tremendously. I just wanted to ask you, right now I'm in a sales position, and I'm actually selling a new product, which you might be familiar with, reverse mortgages.
Uh-huh.
And I'm really debating on, you know, kind of getting out of the reverse mortgage business and getting back into maybe the mortgage business, and I'm kind of hesitant. I don't know if this is going to take off or if it's, you know, just slow and it's, you know, I know it's in the new stage right now. Not many people know about it. They're skeptical. I just want to get your expert opinion, you know, on what you recommend because it's just not really panning out for me, I guess, what I would say.
Well, it's a tough business to get into. In fact, I was speaking to a gentleman in my seminar in Boston just last week, and he was saying he's in reverse mortgages, and one of his problems is getting referrals.
Yeah.
That people who do buy a reverse mortgage do not want to tell anyone else in the world that they've done it. It's almost like a deep, dark secret.
Right.
And so it's at the early stages. It's at the pioneer stages of the industry. As more and more people become retired, more baby boomers retire, and there's 79 million of them now, more and more people will be interested in reverse mortgages. But it's at a baby stage of the industry, and this is a stage where it's much, much harder to do any business. And it's very hard to get referrals, and you just need to be honest about that. Now, sometimes you can get into an area where there's an enormous number of prospective customers who need it. And of course, the older the person is, the more open they are to a reverse mortgage. So I really can't tell you, you know, get in, get out. Just realize that you're at the beginning of the industry, and it takes a while to learn, and it's hard at the beginning. You know, they say, what is the definition of a pioneer? A pioneer is a person laying face down in the dirt with their back full of arrows. And so, in a way, people starting a new product or service are pioneers, and they get hit with all the arrows and all the difficulties of the business. So you just either hang in there or keep your options open.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, John.
Thank
One
you.
More question, and I'll let you get back to work.
There's no question at the moment, sir.
Okay, wonderful. Well, that was great. Well, thank you very much for being here. I really appreciate it. My promise to you is that all these notes will be sent out to you in 24 hours, plus all the other materials that we've promised you that will help you to sell more effectively, to close more effectively, and to get more customers for life. So thank you very much for being on this call, and I look forward to seeing you again in July when we'll talk about networking and how you can build up a large group, a large network of prospects who know each other and who know other customers who can buy from you. Networking is really the key to the future in business today, and I'll show you the inside techniques, tactics, and strategies that you can use to build up a wide net of people who can help you in your business and your life. So I'll see you again in July. Thank you very much. Bye-bye, everybody.